For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that somehow, someway managed to lead the Central Division in the NHL for about 45 minutes. It's time to do a little stargazing. Mark, we're back. Time for the stretch run. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great. How was vacation?
Vacation was good. We were in enemy territory in outside of Boston, outside of New York. I may have missed some hockey games, but I feel like I didn't want to see the ones that happened. So it was a nice moment to be away for a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, welcome back. The Stars are amazingly in either first, second, or third.
I mean, just constantly, right? It's Schrodinger's standings. And actually, we do have some clarity after this morning. So Colorado, Winnipeg played last night, and the Jets and Colorado both played this morning. So finally, we can talk about a Central Division standing without having to deal with games in hand. And we're recording this Sunday while the Stars are in Mullet Arena, right? So even as I say, we don't have to deal with games in hand, we kind of do. But as we sit down to record this, Colorado has taken the lead. It's one of those funny, like, when is an 8-2-0 streak bad news? It's when the team ahead of you is 9-1-0. So Colorado's got 97 points. Dallas has 95. Winnipeg has 93, and all three teams have 71 games under their belt. So the big news, I think, is Colorado's on the 9-game heater. Dallas is a respectable, you know, 3 in a row, and then Winnipeg has lost 3 in a row. So the division is, honestly, it's the same as it's been all season, and it's a pick 'em between three teams that have strengths and weaknesses. And Mark, are we any closer to knowing who the best team is?
I think the best team right now might be Nashville, and they really haven't made up any ground as with the heater that they've been on.
I mean, 5 in a row, 8-0-2. Yeah, they're still behind. I mean, they're in the playoffs, right? 88
yeah,
points.
If everybody else wasn't just playing really well, Nashville would be part of the conversation to get into third, I think.
I mean, it's crazy. It's, you know,
good hockey.
Do that hockey.
Yeah. So let's kind of move in here. You've missed a kind of crowded top of the scoring race here for the Stars as well.
Yeah, it's tightened up a little bit. We've got Robo's having the world's worst point per game season. KT and I were joking about that in the pregame. We were talking about him like his cat's sick. And then you look at the standings and the guy's got 72 points in 71 games. He's, you know, starting to heat up a little bit lately. He's playing well.
Yeah, 24 goals. He's 2 off the team lead. And there's an argument to be made that if things start falling right and he's putting the puck in the net right now, he could end up leading the team in goals at the end of the year.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Mark, because I think you're right. And to give you an idea, there are 5 players. Well, I'm actually going to be charitable because we're going to talk about him later. There are 6 players that are all within. So right now, Hintz and Johnston are tied with 26 goals. That's best on the Stars as we record. One beneath them is Joe Pavelski with 25. Then you've got Jason Robertson with 24, Duchesne with 23, Sagan with 21, and heck, let's throw Mush in there. Mason's got 19. So, like, it's not implausible. Like, you've got 5 players that are absolutely around it. Sagan's back from injury, right? Playing well. So I think you could probably say you've got 6 guys that are really in the race. And, you know, Marchman is always a week away from elation or oblivion, it feels like. So
yeah.
he could lead the team. He could never score again. And I feel like the answer to that changes daily.
Well, and kind of the real interesting thing here is it's a tight race, but there's guys from all of the top 3 lines in that list.
It's a balance thing, right? And it's
yeah.
That's how talking about this, you know, we mentioned strengths and weaknesses of the team, and the thing that you point to with this season for the Stars, the thing that makes them dangerous, the thing that you fear them is, yeah, they've got a guy that could lead the team in goals, playing on all 3 of their top lines, and then, oh, by the way, right?
Yeah, Craig Smith's on a heater. Yeah. 10.
Sam Steele's got 8. Radek Fox has got 6 goals, right? Yeah. So, like, everybody scores on this roster.
Yeah, the only person not scoring right now. Yeah, I'm saying the only guy not scoring right now is probably Yanni Hakanpaa.
The heater, he's hurt right now. So the heater is temporarily on ice.
Well, the heater is on a body part, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But so, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think you're right. Like, the way that Robo's gone in the past, he's one hot streak away from putting a little bit of distance, and you know, Sagan's back and that line's clicking. Well, we're going to talk about them later. We're going to talk about Sagan's return. We're going to talk about the season Jamie Benn is having. We're going to talk about Jake Oettinger. So, you know, maybe have a stiff drink ready. And we're going to talk about this kind of final 11 game sprint to the end of the season. But Mark, before we get to any of that, the tournament is here. And BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season, with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. So head on over to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, Mark, the game starts here.
Yeah, my bracket's already busted. So, I'm back to hockey. That took, I think, maybe 2 games in the tournament before I was dead. So,
who killed you?
Yeah, I'm a bad picker.
Did you go chalk and get underdogged, or were you trying to get cute? And
no, I really haven't followed it a whole lot. So I was using the coin flip strategy, and it failed right off the bat.
Go figure. Well, all right. So we had a couple things talking about storylines for the Dallas Stars. I think where I want to begin is, We mentioned the potential scoring leaders, and Jamie Benn isn't on that list. He's only got 15, but he's got 33 assists to go with it, 48 points. The big cat, he's heading into tonight against the Coyotes. I believe he has goals in 3 straight, points in 5 straight. The captain's having himself a heck of a season, Mark, and I wanted to, one, throw a little bit of a claim on his name and just get your take on what's going on with El Capitan, and why are we seeing such an offensive resurgence this season?
Well, I think I don't know that you can say a resurgence after last season, because last season was the resurgence. We've seen something here He's surgent, not research. Or continuing to be surgent.
He continues to surge.
The interesting thing, it's really 2 games. You have the assist game where he's playing with Wyatt Johnston, and Johnston is playing great, and now with Stankoven in the lineup, Benn is still a good facilitator, and if given the opportunity, he still has a you know, nice net front presence and a good snapshot. Mm-hmm. But you've also seen the heating on the goal side. He's finally found his power play game. And so you talked about, you know, Benn was great on the power play last year. And then
big part of his performance last season was driven. I think it was, something like 13 power play goal. He had quite a few.
It was a large number. And then this year it was like he was on the Schneid forever. And now all of a sudden the goals are going in.
I was right. It was 13. I got to give myself a little praise. Yeah,
there you go.
13 power play goals last season. He's got 6 so far this year.
Yeah, but there's a lot of recency bias in those 6.
Yeah, and yeah. That's
because the conversation was what happened to Benn on the power play, and it's not there anymore.
You're right, and I think I'm trying to phrase this in a way that doesn't get into like armchair psychology, because I don't think it's that. I feel like it is a product of. You know, Razor made the comment a couple games ago that, like, right now, Wyatt Johnston might be the best player on the Dallas Stars, just looking at how his roles are important. And it's about the way the 3 pieces fit together. And I think one of the things that we've seen, especially since Logan Stankoven's been called up, is this, you know, Wyatt Johnston is really the focal point of that trio, right? And Stankoven is the terrier. He's the annoying kid chasing everybody down, you know, puck jacking, finishing all that stuff. And, you know, Jamie Benn is filling spaces and banging bodies and, you know, shooting. But really, like, Wyatt Johnston has kind of puck primacy. And I think that for the energy of the line, that seems to, everybody's kind of slotted into just the perfect spot, right? You know, Benny works the wall and gets open. As you mentioned, he's always had just an amazing snapshot, and he's got two guys on the line that seem to be able to kind of facilitate, get him open. And we're seeing, you know, a result of that.
Well, and I think maybe you need to give Stankoven a bit of credit here, because Stankoven is such a puck hound.
Yes.
And as an F1, he makes that group into something. He allows Johnston and Ben to play parts of their game that they're extremely good at, which is, you know, an F2, F3 position where they can facilitate, they can be secondary coverage coming in on the forecheck, and that allows them to be much more creative. And then Stankoven just, you know, he goes into corners. He actually has, I think, a little bit of advantage because of his short, you know, 5'7".
He
gets short leverage, which is different than tall leverage. He can short, get underneath yeah, short, people's small,
strengths. Small goal boy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you see it before. You're up against a little, you know, Charles Barkley had this when he was playing basketball back in the day. You know, just a guy who's big and you can't move, and he's smaller than you, but he's gonna beat you up.
Yep, the round mound of rebound.
Yep. Anyway, I love the chemistry on that line, and we saw a little bit of chemistry last year, and now we see it again. And Ben seems to really thrive in that position where he's kind of the Papa Bear, and takes guys under his wing, and he can be a little bit of a protector, but he can not be the primary focus, as you were saying. Johnston can be the focus, but that allows Ben Chase to do what he does best.
And I think that this is a good moment, and it's not like we've ever thrown shade on the guy, but when talking about Jamie Benn, especially when he's playing well, often we talk about beast mode, right? And how he puts the team on his back. And we tend to, because of the style of his game and how he plays, we tend to focus on the fact that he is this yeti of a human being that has incredible hands, right? He will beat your brains in and then dangle you, right? He does that. And I think that as a result of that, sometimes we undersell, like, he is also a very intelligent hockey player, right? Mm-hmm. Like, watch the passes that he makes, watch the way that he uses space, like watch the, you know, run the old ISO on him and how he gets around the ice. And I think that one of the things, to your point, I think that one of the things that we're seeing is he has two high-level elite players that are, you know, if you ever want to teach somebody that's never seen a forecheck before, just show them a Logan Stankoven shift, right? Like, he's got two guys that are in very well-defined roles, playing those roles at an incredibly high level. And Jamie is in a position where he's just looking at that and saying, okay, well, where are the gaps? How do I fit here? And he's just fitting in perfectly.
Right. And he makes reads. He's always had this great ability to read where other players on the other team are going to go with the puck.
Yes.
And so he can make plays into their space where he shows up because he's making a good read and he's there unexpectedly. And all of a sudden the puck's going the other direction.
And I think you've also got this guy. He played center for parts of his career, and it wasn't, you know, he was a better winger, but he's had that experience. So talking about young guys, and both, you know, thankfully both Stankoven and Wyatt Johnston profile as guys that pay attention across the entire ice. But, you know, it's not there. There was a great point. I'm, you know, I forget which of the, this might be the PDO cast. So credit to somebody else in the hockey sphere, but they were talking about Joe Pavelski and how part of why he is so valuable as a mentor is not just the advice, but that he's actually good. And just getting into this notion that there's, when you talk about these veteran players that help shepherd new players along, there is a difference when the veteran player helping Johnston and Stankoven kind of accommodate, you know, move into the league and perform at a high level. There's a difference when the guy doing that is an Art Ross gold medal winning, you know, elite player
and
versus just some
yeah.
guy that's played a bunch of games.
Yeah. Or even a guy who doesn't quite have it anymore. You know, Ben
yeah,
is
somebody
an active
still actively
contributor.
Has, you know, yep. Actively has it. It is still in his possession. Yeah. And I think you're right. We're seeing that. And it's not the part that I like that you touched on as well is it's not that Jamie Benn is carrying this line. These players are all independently playing well. And as a result of independently playing well, they're all playing well together, right? It's not an illusion. Nobody's on a bender that's not going to, you know, nobody's doing anything that's kind of ultimately not sustainable. I think would think they were making the point already in his 16 NHL game career, Stankoven already has 2 3-game point streaks. He's been in the league less than 20 games.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, Ben is obviously on the downside of his aging curve, but yeah, both the other guys, you're expecting that they're going to continue to improve. And this is a good part of that process.
It's so good.
Chemistry. Let's talk chemistry. Let's move on to the obvious chemistry line here. Sagan, Duchesne, and Marchment.
I mean, it was like he never left, right? Jamie Benn's old running mate. We had, it was something like both Sagan, Sagan, he was not playing. So he also went like 10 games without a goal because he wasn't in any of them. But, you know, Duchesne and Marchment struggled while he was gone. And this is another one of those things where I come to praise Sagan, not Barry, anybody else. But I think that the narrative got away from us a little bit, the way that line played early in the season. And we, based on their struggles last season, we kind of attributed it, well, of course it's Duchesne and he's the secret sauce. And, you know, he's carrying these two other players along. And, you know, we got a pretty good glimpse of the fact that Tyler Sagan, man, he is not a passenger. He's part of why that line is doing well. And I'm just wondering, why do you think that is, Mark?
I have no idea what's going on with this line. Let me give you some numbers.
Yes.
The line as the three of them playing together, they have a negative Corsi percentage.
Do they?
They're barely over 50% on expected goals, but their actual goals is 2/3, 67%. It's incredible. Mm. They score more than 4 goals every 60 minutes when they're on the ice together, and they give up under 2.
And this is as a trio, nuts. Right?
This is a trio.
So this isn't getting some, you know, negative shine from when Sagan was out.
Yep. So that leaves you, take a look at the pairings of twos where one of the guys is missing. If you look at actual goals, when Marchman and Sagan are on the ice at the same time, 20%.
Really?
When Marchman and Duchesne are on the ice at the same time together without Sagan, 37.5% in actual goals. The best of the bunch is Sagan and Duchesne, and they're only at 45% actual goals. With the exception of Marchman and Sagan, the expected goals are all negative as well. And the Corsis are at best 50%. Mm. So again, I'm looking at this, and you say all you want about the eye test. The eye test just matches exactly what you see in the actual goals for this trio.
I mean, they're good goals, aren't they?
They're great. But if you take any one of those pieces out, it's bad. And we saw that as soon as Sagan was out, that was not a dependable line. They tried multiple different guys in there, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and to your point, the very first shift he was back, they were immediately
they were on fire again.
Yeah, same. It's like he'd never left. This brings two arguments to my or two explanations to my mind, Mark. The first is the cynical statistician, which is this just noise? Right. And are they due to regress? And then the other is always the Homer fan argument, which is, yeah, but like my guys are the ones that finally figured out how to exclusively get excellent scoring chances. So it's clearly sustainable because they've cracked the code.
Well, the problem is that the numbers back up the eye test. This is something where the analytics and the average person watching it sees the exact same thing. But you take one little piece out and all of a sudden it falls apart. It's a one-man Jenga. You pull it and boom goes the tower. And the question on my mind isn't what makes the secret sauce, it's what makes the secret sauce go away.
My honest answer to that is I think that each of these players has kind of an egregious flaw to them. The yin to their yang, right? So Matt Duchesne, right, the things that he does stick handling are, I don't remember that. Maybe peak Jamie Benn, but I don't remember the last time I saw a Dallas Star so consistently be able to just walk in it. He's treating NHL defensemen like rec leaguers, right? But I think the yang to that is he stick handles himself into corners. you know, he passes up shooting opportunities. He makes the pretty play sometimes at the expense of the kind of lunge pail. So he's kind of that classic guy of he gets fixated on the old, we always joked, you know, it's playing by Braille, right? You hear the clack, clack, clack of the stick handling and you know, guys get fixated. So I think with Deshane, you know, Sagan, you can, you know, watch him play. And I don't mean demand as in like a confrontational way, but like Sagan will get into shooting positions that sort of force your hand. Like you got to get him the puck because of where he's standing and who he is. And therefore he scores, right? And so with Deshane, it's that he stick handles too much, right? And I think Marchment is just an agent provocateur, right? He's chaotic. And yeah. Without somebody to give shape to the chaos, like he's going to forecheck and he's going to take some offensive zone penalties and he's going to hack and he's going to whack. But if he doesn't have two guys that can kind of consistently shuttle the puck into dangerous spots, nothing really comes of it. And then the final piece of that is I think at this point in his career, Sagan is, in my mind, is a zone by zone player. And what I mean by that is I think that we don't see a lot of him getting the puck in the defensive zone, running the length of the ice, right? He doesn't do that anymore. But once the team gets set up offensively, watch him work the spaces along the wall. Yeah. Watch him get open, you know, watch him do the little like 5 to 6 feet of motion stuff. And he's still super elite. So Sagan, you know, it makes sense that he can't generate without some help because he can't get himself all the way open. And Marchment's just kind of making chaos. And nobody can make anything happen with the chaos. He can't get anything done. And Duchesne's just going to stick handle forever and ever and ever until somebody gets open. Right. So it's that to me, that's how it all kind of makes sense. That was an extended diatribe.
No, I fully agree. And, you know, in my mind, I take a look at Duchesne and Sagan and I'm talking about, you know, absolute top end draft choices who are on the same line together. And this tells, these are people who process the game much quicker than most other people in the world. And the if other... you put two of them together, they're going to do dynamic things.
Yep.
And then you throw in Marchment. And the one thing I think that makes Marchment so successful, especially on the scoring side here, is for a big guy, he is such a quick stick.
Yes.
I mean, that puck hits the stick and it's off.
He seems like he understands that, like, he doesn't, it's quick.
He doesn't understand,
like, I've got the puck. I need to do something with it immediately.
Yeah.
He's got that clock in his head that says, I'm probably not the guy that's going to make a dozen moves. And just, you know, if I've got the puck, it's because we're in the end game and I need to do something with the puck.
Well, it's like Sagan and Duchesne both play with space. And Marchment doesn't require any space.
No, he almost does. He's almost worse when he has it.
Exactly. He tries to do something too fancy and he's not as, you know, fast twitch as some of these other guys. And so he'll cough up the puck. But you put him in a tight situation, he'll get his stick on the puck. It's off the puck. It's usually elevated and it's likely going toward the net.
And I think to your point, right, when you talk about the entire line together, so, okay, how does it work, right? Deshane gets the puck into the offensive zone. A lot of these goals, right, in this drastic oversimplification, but, you know, Deshane will get the puck into the offensive zone. Deshane and Sagan will play a little two-man game, and then Sagan puts the puck on Marchman's stick and is a goal, right?
Yeah.
Or Deshane puts the puck on Sagan's, you know, but it's usually, it follows that basic flavor of Deshane carries it the furthest. Then there's a series of kind of quick passes, and then somebody gets a shot off.
Right. Well, the other thing the team does, especially with their left wingers, is they cherry pick. And
yep.
Marchman's good at cherry picking. Ben's good at cherry picking. And you don't necessarily need the speed, but it makes the defense honest. And they'll cut back, bring the puck back out. But it allows these guys who are coming down into the offensive zone to find their space. Marchman's really good at that.
I think that's a good point as well, because talking about some of the limitations in Sagan's game and also some of his strengths, when the three of them are together, there are two players on the ice that can create the space that Sagan seems to thrive in. And yep. When there's only one of those guys on the ice, there's not quite as much space. I mean, we saw this all of last season, right? How many times did, you know, Sagan kind of got stuck on that third line, which is him and Marchment and you know, whatever that week's contest winner was. But how often did we see Sagan go through these kind of prolonged slumps when he was just on that two-man group? Then, you know, Pavelski gets hurt, he goes up to the top line and he's productive, right? Every time Sagan wound up on a line with two other players, all of the sudden it was like, oh, hey, wow, he's suddenly productive again, right? So we've seen this pattern before, that he seems to need help is the wrong word because he's playing. It's not he seems to need higher level players around him to really thrive.
Yeah. Let me throw this at you. You remember back to the days when Sagan was first out and they had Delandrie on that line? How many opportunities did Delandrie actually get? The problem, he was getting the same space that Sagan was getting. He just wasn't finishing.
Which is, finishing is a talent. It's not
finishing is a talent. And there's a difference between Tyler Sagan and Ty Delandrie.
you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, but it's not rocket science.
That is a take of all takes. We talk about hot takes. That is a freezing cold take. There's a difference between Ty Delandrie and Tyler Sagan.
Yeah. But I mean, as many opportunities as Delandrie got, they had to pull him off the line because ultimately you got to get goals, and it doesn't make any chance. Getting chances that you can't finish doesn't help.
No, it doesn't help at all. So it's good that they're back. I think it's
it bodes well for the playoffs. Back. We've hit a couple lines here. Actually, we've hit all but the fourth line, and the fourth line is on a bit of a heater as well. So is this really a team that anybody wants to play and come playoff time?
Well, Mark, do you want me to throw cold water on you?
Always.
Okay. So here's the Donnie Downer take. So they've got four lines that can score. What is the goals saved above expected for Jake Ottinger?
For the season?
Yeah.
-8.
-6.4.
Okay.
He is 0.1 behind Scott Wedgwood at -6.3. The guys around them, Cal Peterson, Darcy Kemper, John Gibson, Marc-Andre Fleury, and whatever a Magnus Crona is.
That's big time, baby. We saw him.
Yeah, we did.
We saw him. He was big time against us.
Big time against us. So the answer to the who wants to play against the Dallas Stars question is, if I'm a defender, I don't want to play against any of them. No, absolutely not. If I'm a forward, I don't know. I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I
read Tiffin's piece lately, and Tiffin explained to me in quite proficient detail how Dallas is now an excellent defensive team, and Chris Tanev is the secret sauce, and I don't have anything to worry about there. So that's my counter to you.
I mean, that might be the case. And I hope you're right. My counter to your counter is we've got a lot of data this season that suggests that something is wrong. And I think you're right. Some of it, I was even thinking about the New Jersey game, right? Like you can, every time Otter tends to get shelled, right? You can always find goals that are coverage lapses. And one of the points that I think gets brought up a lot is, right, so one of the ways that Pete DeBoer likes his team to play is he likes them to trap the puck, right? He likes in the defensive zone, he likes to apply pressure on the puck. And the positives of that are is you create a turnover and you can run. And for a team as talented offensively as Dallas is, creating turnovers is a fantastic way to generate offense. And with defenders like Thomas Harley and Miro Heiskanen, and even to some degree like your Ryan Suter's of the world, like they're with the defenders that this team has, that's understandable. What we've seen this season, though, is the flip side is when that trap doesn't work, you get open guys. And how many times this season has a player popped open dead center in the slot, one-on-one against Jake Ottinger, and you know what I mean? And he's been scored on, right? So I think that the downside to Dallas's kind of defensive style is they are giving up a lot of really good looks, and we're not seeing the same ability of Jake Ottinger to just like deal with it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we still are figuring out what the team looks like with Tanev paired with Lindell, which I think most of the people that we talked to would have said that wasn't the pairing they wanted going in.
That wants Miro on his strong side, right? That's the argument. Is playing Tanev with Lindell means that Miro is stuck on his offside.
Yeah, but it also gives you Harley with Miro, so I suppose that's a nice little offset. If you're gonna, it's not Suter on the left side, so you're at least not sad.
Yeah, at least not sad. That's definitely the title. That is the subtext of the subtweet of this podcast. Dallas Stars hockey, you're definitely not sad.
You kind of take a look at it at this point, and the things that we're complaining about at this point of the season this year are not qualitatively the same types of things that we're used to complaining about.
They're good team problems.
They're good team problems. We're concerned about whether Nils Lundqvist is playing in the sixth defender slot or Yanni Hakanpää is.
I kind of think you should.
Well, I mean, it's an important issue, but if your big issue is that you're talking about, you know, what's the disposition of your sixth and seventh defenders, you know, it's like I always tell my dad, it's like, if you're complaining that you're paying too much taxes, that means you're making a lot of money. So just be quiet.
I'm for the most part, I agree with you. I think the one caveat is a lot of the paths when we were talking about how this team succeeds, a lot of the paths forward, a lot of the common reasons to have faith in the Dallas Stars started with the idea that they were set in net.
Yeah.
And the reality of this season, and you can talk about how Tanev maybe fixes this, you can talk about how Ottinger was injured at one point. Like there are a lot of circumstantial reasons that explain what we're seeing. And you can talk about, you know, previous success. Like there's a lot of reasons to think that this isn't an issue, but at the same time, there are reasons to think that it might be. And the reality is Dallas has not had a strong season in net this year. Goaltending has been a problem, and goaltending has been a weakness. And it is not inappropriate. Again, talking about a team that is, you know,
in that first is poised. Place.
In first place could win. I mean, check in after the next couple of games. This team could still win its division. This team could still win its conference, right? This is a fantastic team. But when we talk about that inevitable Stanley Cup playoff showdown with Colorado, with Vegas, with Edmonton, right? With Vancouver, right? When we talk about these showdowns, a lot of the Dallas wins if reasons start with, well, clearly Jake Ottinger is going to play well. And I think that at this stage, we can't really say, well, clearly Jake Ottinger is going to play well anymore, right? We have to hope, but it's not a slam dunk.
I'm kind of a glass half full thing. I look at it and say, you know, if Ottinger plays even hockey, if he's given up the goals that he should give up, that's an improvement on where we are. And this is a team that's in first place. And God knows if he goes on an Aiden Hill heater, all of a sudden, this is a beast. So, yeah, these are problems, and we'll see how it works out. But these are good problems.
Jake Ottinger shows up, this team's never going to lose again.
Yeah.
At this point, they've fixed the forwards are so stunning. And, you know, even just the Miro-Harley pairing, right? If this team gets, like you said, not just elite, if this team gets, like, goals saved at average performance from their netminder, they're a wagon.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the point where it's like, okay, yeah, things would be really problematic if the AAC burned down and we had to play all the games on the road.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that would be a problem, but I'm not really worried about it.
Because you're right. I mean, if that's the problem you're having, then that's a
yeah. You know, I mean, it could be every team has a flaw, and you know, goaltending is one of those weird things. Yeah, you know what? You could be the best team in the world, and if your goaltender decides that they're going to take a series off, you're going to lose, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, anything that I can't control as a team here, I'm not worried about it. Jake needs to do his thing. He need, you know, if he has some technical things where he's, you know, people are picking certain spots, if high over the blocker is he's only making 75% saves and he's in the mid-90s everywhere else, then I know where he's working, and I'm sure he's getting that detail. And you know, maybe Sean Shapiro will give us one of his inside charts here on where Ottinger is having his issues. But that's the level of detail, and he's working on it. And you know, come playoff time, people will try and pick on it, and he's got to fix it.
Well, and Mark, that's an awfully mentally healthy approach, and I'm kind of questioning your Dallas Stars fan credibility for the fact that you're processing things so well.
I'm saving my Starzing for the aftermath.
Yeah, well, that's fair as well. I think the sticking with the optimist, right? So the optimist take as well is the good news for Stars fans and for Jay Gottinger fans is this isn't a case where he had one good playoff series and we made a bunch of assumptions and, you know, it's struck midnight, right? Like he has an elite background, right? He's played well at every level consistently in his career to this point, including a significant stretch of NHL games, right? So we have this isn't a situation where it's a guy that's never done it before that's all of a sudden stopped doing it. And we have to ask ourselves, well, if he's never done it before and if he's not doing it now, then maybe he can't do it, right? This is a guy that has done it and has done it. He's not a one-hit wonder. So I think it is fair, like you said, right? He's got things he can work on, and goalies to some degree fluctuate in the NHL, and nobody is really, you know, checking on the season Andrei Vasilevskiy's having. Like, nobody is good all the time. So there's a lot of reason to think that, you know, certainly there's no reason to think that there isn't another level forthcoming.
Yeah. And I mean, you can't really plan ahead for, you know, Marty Turco has to pitch a shutout every single game or you're going to lose the series.
Yep.
Right. Stuff like that happens. It happens to the Stars maybe a bit more than it should, but yeah.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, when you look at the teams with the best odds to win the Stanley Cup, right? Your overwhelming favorites have what, like a 16% chance, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where there's so much noise, so much randomness, one bad injury. Like you could argue that if Dallas has one more defender they can rely on last postseason, you know, what if Miro doesn't get banged up and run out of gas in the conference finals, right? Or the bubble cup run, if the entire bottom six of that lineup doesn't get hurt, then maybe they give Tampa Bay a little bit more of a fight, right? You can look at these things. So I think, you know, it is a problem. We need to see more and improvement over the course of the season. But when we think about the kind of lottery tickets that Dallas has accumulated and the reasons they might win and the reasons they might not win, I think that you're certainly happy with the way the ledger breaks down in terms of what they need. You know, I always like to ask myself, right? And it's not just hockey, in any situation, right? You ask yourself what needs to go right for a good thing to happen, and then ask yourself what needs to go wrong for a bad thing to happen. And whichever of those lists is longer gives you an idea of how, you know, how special or how much trouble you're in, right?
Yeah.
And the reality for the Stars is the what has to go right list, there's a lot of stuff on that list that could, or so there's a lot, the what could go right list, not the what has to.
Exactly.
There's most of the things that have to go right are things that are already going, you know, there's nothing that's like Sam Steele needs to score 40 goals, right? It's like, no, the guys that are basically everybody has to do pretty much what they're doing right now. Some guys can do it a little bit worse. Some guys can do it a little bit better. There's room, right? But pretty much like if they do what they're doing for the most part, things are great.
You know, we're getting toward the end here. Why don't I throw you a final question here, and then we'll take it from there.
For the sake of fairness, I've closed all of my statistics.
This is not a technical question. This is more of a high level question.
Well, you could have told me that before I closed all of my statistical tabs.
What should Jim Neal have done better this year?
That's a really good question. I've actually got some answers, and I want to stay positive, and I want to say this from the perspective of, I think Jim Neal has done his typically excellent job. So I'm not, this is less side seat driving than I want. Anyways, I'm just going to answer your question. I'm not going to caveat myself. I think that this team, and part of this is benefit of hindsight 2020, but I think that, you know, you could have looked at it last season. I think this team needed another goaltender. Scott Wedgwood is not Anton Khudobin. And so I think that if we're really getting into nitpicking, I think that this team clearly doesn't think that Matthew Murray is ready to be an NHL level goaltender yet. I think that Scott Wedgwood has had some injury and performance issues. We've already talked about Jake Ottinger. I think that if I had to nitpick and make a complaint without offering a solution, then I think that Jim Neal finding another NHL caliber, you know, goaltender, you know, taking a flyer on a veteran, doing something just to get another body in the back, right? I think that is something that this team could have benefited from. And maybe, I don't know. I think that might be it, because the other stuff is more coaching stuff. I think I would have liked to have seen more Lundqvist.
But as you say, that's a DeBoer issue. Yeah. I mean, I might say that Neal might have said that he he had a little less defensive depth in the system that he wanted.
The Bayreuth injury.
The Bayreuth injury certainly hurt. Having followed how Jim Neal acts, I think he would probably agree with you. I think that's probably the one area that he wanted to address that he wasn't able to address.
I think you could get into, like, I would have liked to have seen Maverick Bourque by this point. But at the same time,
replacing who? Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that's my question to you, Mark. Okay. Who do you take out of the lineup to insert Maverick Bourque right now?
Probably you can't right? Because Steele has some presence that I think you want for the playoffs. And so you don't want him going down, and Craig Smith gives you exactly what you ask for him. And so you're talking about bringing Bourque up and maybe getting, you know, half the games in. He's not going to just drop in and be an everyday guy, especially now that Stankoven's in and it's kind of taking that one last slot.
Unless you do some like weird moonshot thing where you say, well, if you call up.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we should have traded Radek, Fox.
I was going to say Marchment. You call up Bourque. You give Bourque Marchment's spot, then you take advantage of the season Marchment is having to trade for another to make a Noah Hanifin trade, and Hanifin and Tanev.
I think you could probably find a direct quote of me saying that like 2 months ago. Yeah, but these are the kind of moves that GMs make when they have a problem.
Yeah,
they're just thrill seekers, and you know, these are the kind of decisions that GMs make in electronic games. This is not a serious decision that Jim Neal ever would have contemplated.
No, there is no rational argument, to your point, in a non-video game real world. There is no rational argument to trading Mason Marchment after this season. Like the message that sends to the team, the performance, and yes, sure, there's a world in which Maverick Bourque pulls a Logan Stankoven and having, you know, Bourque and, you know, that there, sure, you can get into video game arguments about the impact on the cap and perform, blah, blah, blah. But no serious adult GM looks at the season Dallas is having, the way the team is playing, and says, I'm going to remove a player from one of my best lines for a lottery ticket.
Yeah, that's the kind of move that gets GMs fired.
Well, and that's also, again, I like that you mentioned a video game, because that's also there is a locker room impact to all of this. And part of the responsibility of the team is, you know, managing minutes and managing personalities. What does that tell the team?
Yeah, who's Ottinger going to golf with, right?
The only way that helps is if Bourque is immediately just amazing and makes everybody forget about it. And that's a lot of pressure on him, too. It's just a silly mistake.
Well, it's also asking for a whole lot after we just saw that exact same thing with Thomas Harley at the end of last year and then Logan Stankoven this year. It's like, yeah, how many lottery tickets are you going to just hit? Boom, boom, boom. At a certain point, you can't just say, well, my retirement plan is that I'm going to keep winning the lottery.
That's right. You know, and you know, once the roster's, you know, I think you'll see him as a black ace, and you know, it's nice to have him there as an injury. But I think you're right to your question, the thing that this team actually needs is another goaltender, because they just do. This isn't the Ben Bishop, Anton Khudobin, either guy can go, we're not going home, Dallas Stars.
Yeah. Agreed. Anything else?
I don't know what the market was. You know, what is that? Who do you lose? Does doing that deal cost you Sam Steele or Craig Smith, or does that force your hand? And you know, do you have to trade Fox?
I mean, it probably cost you Matty Blumel or something like that.
Well, I mean, just from the roster dollars stand, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you kind of have to play the guy. Like, does that somehow make you, if you do that,
you're actually talking that he should have brought in a number two and had Wedgwood down in Cedar Park.
Exactly. That's exactly.
I was thinking more along the lines of somebody other than Matt Murray, who's your first call up.
I mean,
I don't think Neal would have done that. I think he had, you know, Wedgwood's had a great year. Yeah, numbers iffy, but he's fought. He's done everything the team's asked for him, and he's, you know, he's the second guy there, and that's not going to change.
I want to say this gently because I like
him. He's a new Papa. Quit picking on him.
I just where you don't know where the puck's going to go after it hits him. Like this, he is a battler. I agree. He fights and he's everything. I think in a lot of ways he's what you want out of a number two goaltender because he's going to give you. He's going to be a guy that heads into the second half of a back-to-back knowing everybody's tired and he's going to battle all night, but he's also going to kick a rebound somewhere that absolutely kills you. And a lot of times you're going to be able to score your way out of it, but he's a number two for a reason.
Well, I will not take your Scott Wedgwood bashing laying down. So
I'm really, I'm winning hearts and minds on this one.
Do you not understand that goaltending is voodoo?
It is voodoo. I agree. But his voodoo is, and maybe the fact that they would have a third guy gives you more ability to, you're right. And it could just as easily been a guy in Cedar Park that the team is actually willing to use. Maybe it's, Matt Murray didn't even have a shutout in his last NHL game, but so, maybe it's a Pete DeBoer thing and he's just not willing to try. But
Murray's kind of lost his. Poirier just played a back to back, so Murray's getting the call up, but Poirier's probably 1A down in Cedar Park right now. Yeah. Anyway, I think we should wrap up. I think maybe you should leave your Twitter handle here right at the end here, and then people listening, please bring your hatred to Wes.
Stand by my takery.
Do not send it my way because I'm fully in agreement with all of you, and Wes is just being a bad man.
I mean, in fairness, you do know the difference between Tyler Seguin and Ty Dellandrea, so clearly you're a superior an analyst than I am.
Okay, well, speaking of which, I'm going to go analyze a Stars Yotes game. I think
I was going to say before I let you go. Let me pull up. I'm just going to do the schedule thing real quick because we've got some important games coming. It's tis but the work of a moment. So we've got the Yotes currently, the Sharks, Nucks, Kraken. Ooh, Oilers, a tasty treat there. So next four games, after they play the Oilers on the 3rd, where will the Stars be in the standings after they play the Oilers on April 3rd?
100 points.
100 points?
Yep.
What plays in the division is
that? Oh, no, now you're making me analyze Winnipeg and in Colorado. I'm going to say 100 points and stick with it.
So you only think that's that's just 5 points.
Vancouver has been tough.
Yeah, I know. That's just like, oof. So you think they're going to drop two of those?
Yeah, I mean, it's a road trip. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think maybe we've had some breaks going our way. We get some bad breaks, and then the good breaks come back just in time for the playoffs. And I'll stick with that.
Maybe this gets me off the hook for my Wedgwood takery. It's another good little show me stretch late in the season, but hopefully they do well and prove me wrong with some excellent goaltending. And I should have asked you who would be leading the team in goals, but we'll just wait and see on that one. And with that, thank you all for listening. Don't hesitate to reach out and tell me how stupid I am. I get it plenty at home. I'm used to it. KT, thanks for putting this all together. Mark, for your insights and analysis as always. And podcast over.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.